cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
If you're drowning and I throw you a life jacket, would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns.
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know this.
That's it. I'm done.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Holly, Mr. Brennan Cornan in the studio. We have Mr. Weber and his friend Leica on the board. She's taking over today. We'll see how this goes. You nervous, Brennan?
I'm not nervous.
Oh, what's you're saying? Are you nervous?
Yes. Alfred E. Newman.
Yeah.
What, me worry?
That's right. S&P futures down 5, NASDAQ futures down 22, Dow futures down 40. Kind of a slow day yesterday. We've been a little slow since we had the announcement of the Chinese talks in October, which kind of put everything off some. There's stuff behind the scenes going on with the big tech firms, both in the state and the U.S. antitrust stuff. I don't know where that's going to lead, really. I don't think there's a... I don't know where there's a natural break for, like, Facebook or something. Do you, Brennan?
I, you know, it's really weird what's going on. But I think the uncertainty that we've seen around the world that's been done in large part by our current administration is just mystifying.
We've seen to be, you know, for lack of a better term, and not to be, you know, constantly critical, but I think that we start these brush fires, then we don't exactly know where we're going with them.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that's there's still a few of them still out there. There's the Chinese one. We don't even really have this London thing in the front burner, and it. I don't know this. What's going on over there? Do you fully understand what? I mean, I don't really know the parliamentary system that well.
I'm not that familiar with the parliamentary system either. But you know, Boris Johnson got into office on a hard Brexit leave by October 31st.
When you say he got in, he's the same party as Theresa May, right? He's a different piece of that party,
right? But there was a vote to disband the government under Theresa May, and under parliamentary procedure, it's not like we have in the United States or many countries where, like here, every 4 years there's a presidential election, every 2 years there's a congressional election. There, the government members of the government of the opposition party can call for a vote to throw out of office the prime minister at any time. If they get a certain number of votes, they can just end the government. It would be like comparably that the Democrats right now would just say, we want to have a new election for the president and we're going to do it next week. And they have the vote. In Britain, the government can call for a new vote and the removal of the prime minister. The prime minister can also resign if he or she loses the support of their party. It's called a no-confidence vote.
But this guy is allegedly the same, quote, party as Theresa May.
I think he is, yeah. But she had a lot of a hard time because she lost the majority coalition. Her party does not have a majority in Parliament. So they cobble together, and unlike the United States where there's really two parties, there are a half a dozen or more parties, political parties, in Britain. So you can have these small groups of legislators in the House of Commons who cobble together with the majority party to form a majority party. And if any of those smaller parties defect, then the party in power can be thrown out of power. And these coalitions shift. And just, you know, it would just be like a faction of the Republicans or a faction of the Democrats overthrowing the other parts of the Democratic Party and pulling down the whole government. But yes, he got in, and his theory was that Theresa May had lost the confidence of the government because she could not get her Brexit deal passed, approved by the House of Commons. And therefore, it was not going to be acceptable to the EU. And she faced a really difficult situation because not only was she trying to convince her party, but there were a lot of people in the government who said, we want to stay in the European Union. And others said, no, we have to leave the European Union. And both of them said the deal that she had worked out, that she had negotiated with the European Union for Britain to leave, was not good enough. The those who wanted to leave said, we want more terms that are favorable to us, and those that didn't want to leave said, you know, we want to be able to stay in this, and so we're not going to vote for anything that allows us to leave.
Can you think of anything in American history as basically bleeped up as this Brexit thing? When I say that, I mean, when I look at the both sides, and this is my education from... I ever tell you what? We had this class in grad school where you had to find yourself a governmental unit of some kind or a board or whatever it was. You had to sit and observe, and you had to bring your notebook just before computers, and you had to put all the people down, and you had to, everything, that, every time they said something, every time they, like, shifted their seat, you had to grade it whether it was a power move, a recessive move, whether they were looking, whether they cared about the issue, whether they, it was a whole bunch of stuff. And it was, it actually was really good training for, you know, God knows what, but I mean, it was very interesting. And I've never seen a situation where they had essentially a close vote, but everybody wanted, but the vote was to be out of Brexit.
Mm-hmm.
And every single time a new deal is brought up, whatever new deal, the decision to leave is redebated.
Yes.
So I don't see how they ever, and the weird part is, the guys on the other side in Europe, the bozos in the, in, you know, in, was it the Hague? Mm-hmm. They essentially want to govern Britain from there. They're convinced that their way is the best way. They are going to make it difficult for Britain just so Britain continues to be in this mess. And to me, from the outside, this will never happen. The obvious way to get any kind of a better deal from, Europe on leaving is this particular guy, even though I think he's somewhat of a Trumper, is for him to say, we're leaving, this is one time for that type of negotiation. We're leaving come hell or high water, to where the people on the continent actually get the idea that they are going to leave without a deal and actually make a deal. But as long as you stay in this morass of no deal's good enough and you redebate the thing, if you were to take a vote of the people in Parliament, probably over 50% of them would say they should have another vote to see whether they should leave Brexit.
I think that's right.
So, I mean, you're never going to get... I mean, somewhere along the line, I mean, I know the Queen doesn't do much over there. She needs to come out and say, look, the people voted for Brexit. Parliament, get it together. I mean, somebody needs to be an adult in the room here.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, they don't want an extension. They don't want to leave.
That's
they,
right.
They, I mean, they absolutely do not want to go with, quote, the will of the people.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see how, I mean, being in the middle of that, I don't know how you ever come out of it. You know, I thought this guy had it figured out when he went to the Queen and hit Parliament to disband it, although I'm not a big...
No, that's a different thing.
Well, they're gone now.
I'm not sure if they're out of on their break yet, but they will be leaving this week. If they haven't already started their parliamentary break, you know, similar to the August recess for Congress in the United States.
This is not the break. They just got back from break.
This is called the prorogue, where Parliament is suspended for a period of time, and then when it comes back into session... It comes back in session with an address by the Queen, either in front of them or to them. And what Johnson did was say, we want Queen Elizabeth, please delay your speech by another 2 weeks, which effectively means that Parliament is going to be shut down for an extra 2 weeks. They'll come back in to...
But why did they let him come back first for a few days?
Well, his power play is that if they hold out until October 15th, there won't be enough time for them to pass any legislation that prohibits Johnson from pulling out of the EU on October 31st.
Well, he should have done enough in 3 days.
Well, you know, sometimes when you're up against a wall, you'll take some action, similar to what you just said about Johnson's effect going to the EU to say, we're leaving with or without an agreement, and therefore, you know, I want you to open up the agreement and renegotiate. They're saying no. He goes, okay, well, if you won't renegotiate, we're going to leave even without an agreement. We will bear the economic consequences of that, and so will you.
Well, you say, look, we're leaving. And by the way, the thing about Northern Ireland, how we have to have all these border checkpoints, we're not doing it. See ya.
Okay.
I mean, this is the one time I would be Donald Trump with these people.
Okay.
Because, I mean, that's the vote. That's people don't want to be governed by The Hague.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see that.
Well, remember that the entire purpose of the EU was for the group benefit. And I'll use another analogy for the United States. It is like the difference between each of the 50 states having their own government and seceding from the Union or working as a federal government. It's different in Europe because there are different countries that have had their own economies for hundreds of years, decades, if not centuries. And they combined for the common good, for the economic benefit.
Well, that was it. It was the common market. But it's had the usual bureaucratic creep.
Yeah.
Like every and finally they said it's too much. I mean, mm-hmm. what did Lou say? They put out new rules regarding teapots the week before the vote, and the British said, mm-hmm. that's it. That's too much. We don't mm-hmm. need these people telling us about our teapots.
Which is interesting because of the Boston Tea Party and how instrumental that was in the United States history.
Yeah.
And now it's a different type of teapot and teapot tax. But yes, I mean, many people in Britain thought that they were being ruled too harshly, that they were giving up too much of their economic independence and wanted to have their own rule back for economics. And that was the basis of Brexit, leaving the European Union.
Did you, shifting gears, as we have gone from one chunk of regulatory area, and this, and you know my views on all this, one chunk of regulation to another, to where we have this massive army of regulators, the majority of which I think know nothing about the mm-hmm. industries they're regulating. They're actually, I saw a thing the other day that the SEC or FINRA or somebody or other has fined OCC, the Options Clearing Corp, like $20 million. When regulators start essentially fining other self-regulatory groups, have we reached the end of our road here? So where are they going to get the $20 million when the issues are like newer, a bunch of different types of, they haven't got enough machines, they haven't advanced the technology. So you're going to take $20 million. What exactly is the SEC going to do with $20 million? Give each other a bonus or what?
They can't give themselves bonuses, but they will probably use that money for regulatory and enforcement actions.
Now, why do you say that? FINRA can.
I don't think that the SEC can give their regulators or their...
No, but FINRA is now is like an outside arm for profit.
Okay, so it's an outside arm for profit.
So what's her name? Went to become the head of the SEC. She got like a $2 or $3 million bonus when she left.
Not from the SEC.
From FINRA.
Okay.
FINRA is a for-profit arm of what the exchanges in the NASDAQ used to do as part of their self-regulatory charter.
Okay,
they all decided to split all that off into FINRA, and it's a for-profit deal.
All right, but those are under different rules, and they're not a government entity.
What genius decided you're going to have people running around finding your members, and that's how they get paid?
I can't answer that. I don't know the answer to that.
It's like every time a policeman gave a ticket, he gets $10.
Yeah, that would make it pretty lucrative, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
You'd probably see a lot more tickets being issued, too.
Well, I'm not saying if they come and give a firm a specific fine, those people get the bonus, but that's how they're obviously aware that that's how they all get paid.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's really, where is our adult in the room here?
Mm-hmm.
This is what the British people are blaming a lot of this stuff on. Massive rules and regulations on every item there is. They're blaming this on essentially the European Parliament, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And when they joined the European Union, I don't think anybody signed up for yet another Parliament. They're probably pissed off enough at the one they got.
Well, they certainly seem to be angry enough with them now because of the whole Brexit fiasco.
Well, but, there's people that are absolutely convinced they shouldn't be leaving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and they bring up that fight every single time.
Mm-hmm. And it was a surprising vote that enough people voted to leave, and a lot of it was a political marketing to have Brexit leave. I mean, it was a big sale of the British people to leave, and they did a remarkable job. The leave the EU did a remarkable job in positioning their position to the general public right before the election. It was a shock when the Brexit numbers came out the way that they did.
Somewhat of a shock. I had it pegged. I had my sources.
Well, so did Trump. I mean, Trump's predicted that the Brexit would have passed when the vote was coming up.
The you and I, and a lot of other people on the show for years now, have been questioning I mean, obviously, we all were forced to take statistics and a little bit of, you know, how do you do a national poll and those sorts of things in school. I don't know how you do it now, Brendan.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, don't. I mean, if you take it something that's let's go back real quick, Cliff Notes version. If you have 100,000 people in the population, could you do a random sample of 50 people and have it be very accurate? I'm going to say the answer is yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. However, and this is where the however comes in. You need to use a random number table or a random number generator on the internet or something. You have to generate the 50 people seriously at random, and you've got to talk to those 50 people.
Mm-hmm.
If you can only find 40, it ain't working.
Mm-hmm.
Because the people you can't find probably are in some sort of set. They're all thinking the same way, and you don't know how they're thinking. You can't talk to the guy across the street. There's a difference between the guy who's home at night and the guy who's not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a big deal. So when I read, you know, nobody ever, you know, I guess, actually when I read it was because some of the listeners were writing nice enough to send me all this stuff. I read article after article about how they basically screwed up. There were people that had voted. You know how whenever you see this stuff, they'll say, with a poll of likely voters, Trump leads, trails Biden by 5%, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. Now, the deal in there, somebody's decided that these are likely voters. Now, where mm-hmm. he's finding them, whether Michigan Avenue, State Street, God only knows. Because you're probably not finding people at home anymore because without the landlines, and even then, most people are so pissed off at marketers, they won't talk to you.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't see where you get the randomness. But evidently in Britain, they claim, Brendan, by the way, you know more about this. If you just don't vote for a long time and you move, which most people in this country move, I don't, but some people move, what, every 5 years? Mm-hmm. 4 years is the average? If you just move out of your place to the next place, even if it's the next precinct, I guess you could probably try and sneak in your old precinct, but you don't really, you got nowhere to vote. If all of a sudden there's an issue that comes up and say, I'm voting, do you have to at least register the new address somewhere?
In Britain, I don't know.
Well, here, I mean.
Here? Yeah, you have to, if you want to vote in the next election, even if it's like a local election, you have to report your change of address and you're moving into the new precinct. If you don't, you can't vote.
Okay. But over there, they said that an appreciable percentage, you know, not like 90 or 80 or like that, but I'm going to say 10, 15, 20% of the voters were people that hadn't voted in like at least a decade,
mm-hmm.
maybe longer. So, you know, somehow or another over there, they're still registered. Maybe people don't move as much, but, you know, Grandpa, you know, Bob and Grandma Millie evidently have not gotten their butts out of the house to vote since, you know, 1975, and all of a sudden they trundle down the block for this one.
Mm-hmm.
Evidently, they don't move enough to where they're not still registered. So something like 10, 15, 20% of the voters were people they did not expect to vote at all.
Okay. I don't know if that's true or not. I'm not aware of that fact pattern.
I'm saying a lot of the stuff, the articles that people sent me, I remember reading it, because I was very curious as to why they screwed up so bad.
Mm-hmm.
And it was sort of the same thing as here with the Trump thing.
Mm-hmm.
You're not getting to people. You're not getting to the people that are going to come out of the woodwork and vote. And obviously, the people you think are likely voters maybe don't vote.
Mm-hmm.
So somewhere there's a mess up in your random sample.
Right.
Well, but our buddy Robert from the Fed was over there doing a thing for the Fed, and he was in London. He goes, everybody there is voting no on the Brexit. But Robert he loves history like me, so he had a couple days, and he went down to see, went down to Trafalgar to see Nelson's flagship or something. Mm-hmm.
The Nelson statue?
No, the ship.
Oh, the ship. Okay.
Yeah, evidently the ship is still in the water and whatever.
Yeah.
It's like U.S. Ironsides here, still commissioned mm-hmm. type of thing. Hmm. He went down there, he said, the minute he got out of London, people he talked to on the train, everybody down there, we're out of here, screw this.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, the second, I mean, he came back, he says, if you're doing a poll in London, you got this thing getting beaten about the head and shoulders. The minute you get out of London, you got it winning.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my unofficial poll. Robert talking to everybody, which he does. He's a terrific guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, yeah, once you get out of town, boy, they went out of this thing. They want these guys making rule after rule. They went out of here in a second. So, I mean, someone, whoever did the polling was very, shall we say, London-centric.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't do so hot.
Mm-hmm.
So there.
Well, they obviously were wrong. And obviously, pollsters here were wrong a couple of times with their predictions.
So, your new mayor, just like the old mayor, let's find something that I don't have to pay and let's tax them?
Yes. Well, that's the politically expedient way to go. Always look for who's going to be able to pay without the biggest squawk. And that's why, I mean, that's one of the reasons why sin taxes have always been popular with politicians. And even the argument for things like gas taxes, because if you're going to use our roads, if you're going to use the gas, you can pay for it. So we'll hike up the taxes there.
Alderman bought taxes, bought gasoline. Paid for it.
Good point. But I mean, the idea is that things that affect a minority of the population, and I'm not talking about racial or ethnic minority, I'm talking about just the number of people overall across all classes that use a product, they are more likely to pay, and it's more easily accepted. You know, liquor tax. Anybody who doesn't drink will say, sure, tax those people.
Yeah.
Cigarette tax. Anybody who doesn't smoke, sure, tax those people. But don't tax my property tax. Don't raise my property tax because I'm affected by that, and everybody's going to be affected by that.
What is your legal opinion regarding the pension clause in the Constitution?
Well, it is inviolate. The way that it was drafted, it means that you can't diminish the benefits once somebody has been hired. Now, I think that there are some arguments. Unfortunately, they've been rejected by the Illinois Supreme Court.
Well, there's no business in this because they're in the same pension plan.
Well, that's right. But the fact is that they still have made a decision. They've considered this. And the argument of consideration that John Culleton brought up a while ago was turned down by the Illinois Supreme Court.
What was that argument?
The argument was that even though the clause in the U.S. in the Illinois Constitution says you can't diminish the pension, that you can negotiate it. That if the unions say we will give up some of our pension benefits in the future in exchange for X.
Actually, I think you can do that.
Well, no, that was rejected by the court. That was part of the whole plan that Cullerton had, that John Cullerton had in the Senate bill.
I thought you could collectively bargain it down. You're saying you can't.
No.
All right, well, I'll run this one by you. We did this yesterday, but you're the attorney. I read two views of this, and of course, you know, you attorney dudes will argue about anything, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the person who said the clause is not binding essentially says, since there's no avenue for funding.
Doesn't matter.
Well,
the fact that the money isn't there doesn't make it.
But his point was, what if it said people couldn't die?
Well, then you can bring those people back to life. We'd have a lot more of Jesus around.
but what I'm saying is, his point was, you can't have something that is so stupid that if everybody in the state's on a pension but one guy, he better come up with it. His point was, if it says you cannot diminish pensions, and if the money wasn't there to state is the person of last resort, he said that would make sense.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea that unnamed people just have to pay, he says, that the thing is so idiotic that it's not even a line, it shouldn't even be a line.
Yeah, but I'm going to revert to a line that you hear a lot in the business world and the political world.
You got to do it after
but
the break.
But it's legal.
Though. Well, but I mean, I guess what I'm saying is we need to have what if we wrote in there you need a 50% surplus every year? People can't pay it. You might as well put in there that, you know, nobody can get sick.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying. I'm not arguing. I'm just. His point was sort of well taken, though. I mean, it's just a clause. S&P futures down 3.25. Dow futures down 14. NASDAQ futures down 12. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Yes, it is stupid and it's irrational.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know.
Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell, Mr. Brennan Cornan, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. We also has his assistant, Angelica Vlasenko. That's why we say Lico or AV, but it's a great name, just kind of a little long. We had to get Jessica Zalewski down to Jay-Z, just too much for the Chief at this hour in the morning. Again, S&P futures down 5, Nasdaq futures down 23, Dow futures are down 13, not very much. Over in EU, it's slow all over the place. DAX up 28.2%, FTSE down 5, call that flat, CAC down 11.2%, so they're mixed to even over there. In Asia, we've got the Nikkei up 73.3%, Shanghai down 3.1%, Hang Seng up 2, call that flat. So not much going on there at all. Bonds back up to 1.63 from a low of 1.48, so that's a pretty good move in the 2 weeks, almost to the point where they're almost inverting their way out of the yield curve on their own without the Fed dropping the front end. Yeah, imagine that. Bund, minus 0.57. which is it's still negative, still sounds weird, but it's way less negative than it was at 0.79. Japan 10-year minus 0.22. Well, we got oil up 42 cents, 58.27 was up yesterday. Brent up 44 cents, 63.03. Natural gas 2.62. RBOB gas 1.60. Guess what I got gas for, man? Eat your heart out on Sunday morning.
How much?
2.29.
Oh, that's good.
All the stations around the area were 2.69. There were four stations on Bell Road and 143rd Street. Those four stations are all 2.29. Mm. I don't know if they just got in their new shipment or what. We've got gold is down $9.
So what did you do with the $10 you saved?
Went over to Myers and bought some stuff.
There you go.
Silver's down 13 cents.
Always contributing to the economy.
Oh, yeah. You got to do it. Well, you know, I'd still rather have extra stuff, a couple of, you know, slabs of ribs in case people come
over. More is never enough.
Yeah, well, you know, it's... Well, yeah, there is because the freezer's full. So you know, we're at the end of the rope.
Then
on
you
that.
Just have to eat it.
Oh, yeah. Then we just got to actually, you know, start cooking. But I mean, what do you have for us, Traffic Weather Sports?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. A couple of accidents already to report here this morning. On the Kennedy outbound before Canfield Road, we have a crash that's causing delays on I-90. This is affecting both sides, you know, but the crash is on the outbound side. On the Eisenhower, we have an issue out near Forest Park, a stall in the left lane just before Des Plaines Road. That's causing congestion as folks navigate around that. And then as you're coming in on the Stevenson, it looks like we have an accident blocking the right shoulder just before LaGrange Road. And so that's causing issues coming in on the Stevenson. So a few accidents to report already, which is pretty rare for this hour. So keep that in mind as you're heading in. No issues on the Ryan, I-57, or the Bishop Ford. Suburban tollways look quiet right now as well, so that's good news. One other thing to report, out in the northwestern suburbs, we have wires down in the road at West Bloomingdale Road at Illinois 19, which is Irving Park. And crews are on the scene getting that cleared up. Weather today, clouds early, and then we're pretty hot and steamy, actually, for this time of year. We'll be in the upper 80s, expecting a high of 87 here downtown. Could touch 90 further inland. Right now, it's overcast and 73 degrees at the lakefront. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy with a high of 97. Right now, it's mostly clear and 84. In sports, the Cubs got a much-needed win last night, blowing out the Padres 10-2. Top prospect Nico Horner was the story. He came up, started at shortstop with Baez and Russell out, had three hits, drove in four runs, and made a few great plays at short as well, turning some double plays. The guy can play. Everyone knew that, but we didn't expect to see it in 2019, but here we are.
His first chance was a racket right at him.
Yeah. White Sox were off last night. They'll host the Royals tonight. Diamondbacks lost to the Mets 3-1. Monday Night Football, it was the Saints rallying back for a last-second field goal to top the Texans at home 30-28. And the late Monday night game saw the Raiders upset the Broncos 24-16. Chief.
Did you, still can't, you were there watching the whatever iteration of it was, listening to the girls talk and the show talk. The guy who did the color announcing of the Monday night game last night was absolutely going ballistic at the...
Booger? Anthony McFarlane, I think. Booger
who's
McFarlane.
Who's the African-American guy?
I think that's him, right?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't show him. I heard him. And the last play, I don't know if you watched it, Brendan, but Saints have the ball. They got it on their, I'm going to say, their 48 or something. Their guy can kick the ball like 56 yards or something. So they got to go to the 44 of the other dudes and or the 42. And there's 6 seconds left. They got to go like 9 yards. The other team, who's the other, was it Tennessee?
No, the Houston Texans.
Houston Texans. They go into, this total prevent where they've got their two safeties are 25 yards off the ball. And the guy's going, what are they doing? Don't they know he's only got to get 8 yards? I mean, look at Drew Brees. He sees there's no defenders in that area. Some guy runs a slant. They only have 6 seconds. Down he goes, calls timeout. They got 2 seconds, bring the field goal guy out, and boom, puts the thing through the – but the Joel, how are you, buddy?
Good morning, Chief. How you doing on this Tuesday?
I'm doing fine. I think your team should – maybe drop down a little bit lower and play like Marist High School for their first game next year so they can be sure and win.
Why did I know you were going to bring up Michigan football today?
Joel, from the beginning, though, was worried about Army.
Yeah.
You were.
Thank you.
Army
Thank you very
training,
much,
sir.
Matty Ice. Yeah. Yes. A lot of problems, a litany of problems. I think first, penalties and turnovers. I mean, if you want to compete on the big stage, you just can't turn the ball over. You know, so far Patterson has 4 turnovers. Also, they had a bunch of penalties, and I don't know if you guys watched the game, but there was a point where they were a yard from scoring another touchdown, going up 21-7. I also have to question a couple hardball calls there, going, I don't know if we're speed and space or just back to the same old stuff, but 4th down and, you know, 3.5 minutes to go in the game, and you don't kick a field goal to take the lead, so... A lot of questions about Mr. Harbaugh and a lot of tough games coming up. We definitely won't lose this week. We have a bye. But then we got to go to Wisconsin. And right now I'm calling the early line. I think Wisconsin should be favored by 2 touchdowns. They look fantastic.
What is Army better recently, or are they better this year?
I mean, they were 11-2 last year. They've drowned Navy over the last couple years. You know, people that are going back. They played Oklahoma to overtime last year. I mean, they were good. It was, you know, I mean, they weren't good. I just think we were just horrible on offense. But they're formidable. I mean, 11-2 last year, winning a bowl game, and they're not a bad team. But you know, we run up against, you know, like Auburn, LSU, Ohio State. I mean, there's a lot of teams that look a lot better. So there's a lot of hardball criticism going on here. And like I said, they got the bye week. The positive thing I will mention is that our top wide receiver, Donovan Peoples-Jones, speedster out of Detroit, has been out the first couple games. And he's our best receiver. He's our kick returner. But, man, oh, man, everyone has injuries. It's really, you know, it's hard to play the injury card this early in the season. Every team is susceptible to them.
Oh, my buddy Billy was telling me he's a Purdue fan. He said this wide receiver they got in Purdue is really special. But he was a freshman last year, and he was the number one pass receiver in the Big Ten or something. He's a sophomore now.
Yeah, I you know what? I know who you're talking about. I can't think of him by name, but you know, Purdue stumbled their first game. Second game, I believe that they won. They beat Vandy. We also got Illinois, and they're playing Brandon Peters, who was a transfer from Michigan, a graduate transfer. So there's a lot of tough games on the schedule here, and I won't be laying the points. And unless Michigan's getting more than 14, I won't be taking the points against Wisconsin.
For years and
I
years.
Really was thinking, I wish I would have listened myself. I really don't like to wager on games, especially Michigan games. Like, I don't like to bet against them, because then if they blow somebody out. But there's so many times where I'm like, geez, you know, that's just too big of a spread. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. And good thing I'm not a Lions fan, because that was an absolutely horrible loss there. Did you see what happened in that game?
It wasn't a loss. It was a tie.
It feels like a loss here if you live in Detroit.
Yeah.
They had a 3rd down late in the game, 3:40 to go. Stafford set up. Gets the playoff, throws a wide open screen, 1st down, game's over. The offensive coordinator for the Lions called timeout. And so the play didn't count, and then they ran the 3rd down play, they didn't get it, and then you all know what happened from there. But you're losing to a rookie quarterback, a rookie coach that was sub-500 in the Big 12. I don't know, could be a tough year for the Motor City Kitties.
Why did the guy call timeout?
Because he saw something that he didn't like. And, poor Stafford, man. He was livid. I don't know. You can see it. If you watch the replay, Darren Bevell, who was the offensive coordinator at Seattle when they did win the Super Bowl, was calling a pretty good game, but he saw something. They don't trust Stafford, I guess. And, boy, that guy was livid. And
well, explain to me something.
Now they got the Bulls coming in next week. So
when did... You sports mavens, when did that rule change? The rule that says that a coach can call timeout. That's relatively recent. It used to always have to be a player.
No, they've done that for quite a long time.
Maybe a decade, but not 30 years. It used to always have to be a player.
Well, at one time you couldn't pass the football either.
Well, no, I'm saying, but the idea of
that's when Michigan dominated.
I'm gonna surprise both of you guys. I'm gonna have Mr. Weber look this up, because. I mean, you never this thing where you run down the sideline, you ice the kicker with a, you know, quarter second left and make him kick. That's recent. I'm going to say that's within the last decade. I could be wrong. Joel, thank you very much, buddy. S&P futures now down 550, NASDAQ futures down 26. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks, Mr. Kenny.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice-weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with their choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Say a little prayer for you. You must know that Kenny Polcari is coming in. S&P futures down 575. There's that futures down 28. Kenny, how are you, buddy?
I'm good. That's a perfect song, by the way. I love yeah. that song.
Oh, yeah. It's a good one.
It's a classic. Burt Bacharach.
Yeah, my Notre Dame buddies now, some of whom are serious audiophiles. Every day now you get like a missive of a song for the day. Could be any decade. Well, they have their decades. And then every other person who sang the song all listed on YouTube, and you can go back and, and watch.
I think nobody does it better than Dionne Warwick. That's really the classic. When you think of that song, you have to think of her right at the top of the
line. Oh, God, yeah. Matter of fact, there's a quick story before we get into some serious stuff. The young lady who's the bartender at our Buckingham Club, and it's a little bar in there. People don't go in there that often, but anyways, little African-American girl, she's terrific, and she was playing Killing Me Softly, and I'm like, this doesn't sound right. And she goes, what do you mean? This is What's Her Name, and it was a big 90s hit. And I said, no, it was a hit long before the 90s.
A big 90s hit.
Yeah, and she goes, well, I never even heard of that one. I said, why don't you find, she got her little machine there, of course they can find anything. I said, why don't you go find Roberta Flack, mm-hmm. and put that on there. And so she puts it on and she goes, I've never heard that. Boy, that's a lot better. I said, no kidding. No kidding.
It's so true.
Yeah,
it's so true. That's another classic song.
But it's old.
Every time I hear those songs, you know, it's naturally, like anything, it's that the memory takes you right back to where you were at that moment in time, whether you were in high school. You remember it because you just remember it.
Well, especially if you heard it at a concert or whatever. So is it true you were at Woodstock?
No, you bastard. I was not at Woodstock.
And you still have your little micro bus? By the way, those things are worth a fortune. If you have a micro bus, I can see you with a whole garage full of those things. Every year selling one for like $40,000 a piece to some deadhead guy or something. Well, Kenny, are we going to be in a snoozer market here all the way to October or what?
No, I think it's going to be a snoozer market until Thursday, right? Because this Thursday is going to be that big ECB announcement where Mario Draghi, by the way, this is his last meeting because now he's handing the reins over to Christine Lagarde, remember, right? So he's out, she's in. He's been hinting for the last 3 or 4 months that the ECB will do whatever it takes, kind of, you know, that commentary that he made a number of years ago in the middle of the crisis, because he's hinted that over the last couple of meetings without doing anything but keeps hinting. So the market's really waiting to see. And I think the risk here is that he actually disappoints. I think that he is going to announce some stimulus, some more Kool-Aid, but the risk is that the market's not going to think it's enough. Now, on the other hand, if he goes all in and he does everything the market wants and then he tosses it into Christine Lagarde's lap and he walks out the door, okay, I'm done with this, he's going to say, right? But I think that's really the risk. And so I think the market's just going to kind of churn here until it gets a better sense of what's going to happen, because that's going to then force the Fed's next move. Because if Mario Draghi disappoints and the market, the algos go into a temper tantrum and they start to sell the market off, I think that puts more pressure on the Fed to absolutely, I don't think there's any risk that he's not cutting rates. But even if there was, if the ECB disappoints, that takes all that risk off the table, that the Fed will not cut rates next week. And I think they will. I don't think they need to. I don't think they should. I'm in that camp that's not a believer of lower rates. You know, I think we're just pushing on a string in this country, because I actually think the numbers in this country continue to be solid. Not necessarily gangbusters, but they're also not falling off the ledge. And so therefore, I'm in the camp that doesn't believe we should cut rates, but yeah, that's the minority camp at the moment. Everybody not only thinks he should cut rates this month, but now there's this talk about the rate cutting cycle that we're now in. I heard on CNBC this morning. I was driving to work. I don't remember. I couldn't get the guy's name. What it was? He thinks that we're on this cycle of a 1% rate cut over the course of the next year, which takes us right down to 1% in rate, which I think is beyond ridiculous. But look, I'm not an economist, so what the hell do I know?
Well, we've seen the 10-year rate come up 15 basis points in the last week.
Right.
We've seen the Bund go from minus 0.79 to minus 0.57. So actually, right, the rates are pushing up a little bit. And I think we've bought them, Kenny. I mean, I don't very easily make a statement like that.
I got to tell you, I think it's a mistake for the Fed to cut this month, although they're going to, because I think he's backed into a corner. He feels backed into a corner between what the president and the White House, how they abuse him every day, and I think he's backed in the corner because the market, you know, basically, I think he's afraid of the market throwing a temper tantrum. But honestly, I think he should let the market throw a temper tantrum. That's what I think he should do, and I think he should let the market reprice, because the only reason that we're way up here is because everyone thinks he's cutting rates, and if he cuts rates, and the ECB cuts rates, and China adds more stimulus, all it does is put a floor under equities. For what? It's an artificial floor, and we've talked about this. And when that floor starts to become removed, if they're even able to do it, you see what happens to the market. So the longer they add more Kool-Aid to the punch bowl, the longer this kind of ridiculousness goes on, in my opinion, because unless the global data points completely fall off the edge, which I don't think they're going to, falling off the edge would take us back to 2007, 2008, 2009. That was falling off the edge. I don't think we're anywhere near that at all. I think it's ridiculous to keep pushing rates lower. I think you have to just let the market and the economy work through it. I don't think you can keep, you know, okay, everybody lie down, let's talk about this, take a Xanax, let me help you through it. That's baloney. That's baloney.
Kenny, I would have seen you standing next to Moses trying to explain how it was a good idea for the manna from heaven to stop and people stoning your ass. You make absolutely perfect sense. The people who own stock, the one percenters of the world that love this, the Greenspan start, it's not what people make, it's the wealth, the growth in wealth. That whole group would not be a Kenny Polcari fan, even though you make absolutely perfect sense to somebody like me.
Well, they may not be a Kenny Polcari fan, but guess what? The truth is the truth. Look, I just call it the way my stomach tells me, right? I got this gut feeling, right? I just got this feeling in my gut. It feels right or it feels wrong. And to me, this just feels wrong. I'm going to talk only about the Fed at the moment because the ECB, look at this. I mean, talk about you continue to do the wrong thing. The ECB cut rates in the middle of the crisis, kept rates lower, continued to add QE, continued to cut the rate. And they supposedly are still struggling. So, let's talk about what all those rate cuts and negative cuts and all that stuff has really done for the European economy. I think the real problem is, and I put this in yesterday's note, I think the world has changed. I think the economy has changed. I think business has changed. It's been complete disruption. I think you have to start to look at new ways to value the economy and to value, data points. I think some of these data points that we use are 100 years old. Right? 50 years old. There hasn't been any renovation to, okay, let's take into account this new economy. Let's take into account how this may change the equation. You can't keep using an old equation in a new economy.
What do you mean? We're doing, that's exactly what we're doing. We're building debt. That's what we've been doing for 20 years. We keep doing it.
I mean, I hear you. And we're going to see where that's going to take us, right?
Well, but I mean, what you're saying, unfortunately, I guess, or fortunately, because I have you on the show, you just said what I believe totally in a much more articulate manner. Yet listening to you say that, nobody wants to hear it, Kenny.
I hear you. Exactly right. Nobody wants to hear it. But
if my stock that's...
They need to hear it.
If my stock that's worth $50, it's trading 90. If these guys throw more money at the place and it's going to trade 95 like next month, that's what I want. I don't want Mr. Polcari telling me it's too much.
I understand. But, okay, you don't want Ms. Polcari saying that. But yet, when the day of reckoning comes, the stock that's trading at 95 is now going to trade at 40.
I agree.
Because it's going to have to give all that up in order to reprice what the real economic environment looks like. And that's going to be the fear. Because at what point is the Fed going to be able to blunt or stop the bleed? And I think, once again, that's also the fear, right? If they cut rates to zero now, there's no more ammunition in the gun closet. What else are you going to do?
Kenny, they're pouring M2 into the last 3 months, last 13 weeks, whatever you want to look at. They're pouring M2 in at 9.1%, higher than any time. So what, unfortunately, most of the talking heads on CNBC, they keep talking about these rate events. It's not a rate event. It's how they manage the money supply. They've already cut the rate by pouring in at 9.1%. It's already done. They're just going to announce what they've done, right?
Yeah, right. I agree.
I mean, but there's two of us that know that.
Let's see what happens then.
Yeah, but there's two of us that know that.
Right. Well, now there's all your listeners that know that.
Right, but this manna from heaven thing. The last thing anybody wants now, because if you look at even last month, we only have 30 seconds. The sales were up 0.6% and the income's 0.1%. Well, it went on the credit card. But people are going to say, well, that means people are confident. Confident in what?
Right. Right. I don't think it's so much as they're confident. I think it's how they have to live, right? I think they're doing that because they need that to live. I don't think it's a matter of confidence at all.
I would agree with that. Kenny, take care of yourself. You're not supposed to be as much of a downer as me, but you were very much more articulate than me. I'll say that. Take care, buddy.
At least I'm happy, right?
You're always happy. Take care. Well, I hope to see you soon. Talk to you next week. SP Futures down 5.25, NASDAQ Futures down 24. Be right back.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we are also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. It's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's J-O-H-N at PTISecurities.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Something happening here.
Hello, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. We got a full house here. I'm Tom Howell. He's Mr. Brendan Carnan. We also have Pete Molmatt. He's the executive VP of the Small Exchange, a writer, and he's been around for almost as long as me, although he doesn't want to say how long. All kinds of crazy stuff. We were just talking to Brendan on break that I was accusing Brendan of being a Southsider, and there's always somebody...
Which I have to admit to.
Yes. There's always somebody who grades your papers. There's the nuns, and you got to take them home, and if they're lousy, mom had to sign them, and then at the end of the day, there's St. Peter waiting for you, right, telling you, eh, or yay, right? So, but I love the people who are in government. They had some, I'm not being sexist, there was some lady who was the... one of the, either she was a Fed governor, or she was a voting member from Minneapolis, one or the other.
Oh, God. Chris Lakota, I think, wasn't that?
She was on talking about how how they were given, or Trump's given Powell a bunch of grief. And she said, well, you know, when we did QE3, people gave us all kinds of, pushback. And
we just had a, you know, stick to our guns and do it. And I'm sitting there, hey, whoa, 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 Missy. And I know that's sexist, but the reason why you did it is because QE1 and 2 didn't work.
Right.
and now and you're going out and bailing these banks out, and you're buying mortgages for, and you, for a price you still won't tell people. Meanwhile, the guy in the house is getting kicked out. And now you've got all this money out there, and you got this zillion-dollar balance sheet. Yeah, people got a problem. And she's like, everybody knows that was like the perfect thing to do. And I'm thinking, no, they don't. Right. Where's the nun with the red marker?
Yeah. You know, and it's so funny because you look at what the Europeans are doing. I mean, the Japanese own, I mean, they basically bought 80% of the JGBs, their equivalent of our U.S. Treasuries out there, and they own half the ETFs. So, while what we did through QE1, 2, and 3 pales in comparison, it's still, I think the argument is, did it really work, or did the market just adjust itself? And I think if you look over in the Eurozone, they're doing the same thing. They've almost bought all the debt they can that qualifies for it.
Right.
Now they're going out and buying, change the rules to buy peripheral debt, which is by far highly riskier just to have stuff to buy, and they're considering direct asset purchases. So you look at those two situations, you've driven 10-year rates in Germany down to negative 70 basis points. I think at some point we'll look back at this and think, who is willing to loan money for 10 years?
By the way,
get us back.
What do you make of the rally there from down minus 79 to like minus 56 in the last week?
You know what? It was due. I mean, they squeezed really hard. You look at our treasuries, you know, we got down to 151 in our 10-year. We've had a nice bounce. The long end has bounced a little bit. Curve steepened, but, you know, by such small amounts. I mean, we've gone from a very small inversion in 2s-10s. We're slightly positive in that now. Yeah, they've corrected a little bit, but not much. You know, I still look at Swiss rates are even further negative than the German rates trying to, and all of these seem, everybody wants to take the route, and maybe I'm reading too much into it, but a cheap currency is the easiest way to get out of a problem. So everybody is either using rates or some form to get their currency as cheap as possible in an attempt to grow themselves out of this stagnant economy.
This is out of the playbook of literally the 1500s.
Yes.
And I don't know if you're a fan. One of the few guys in the Obama administration I liked was Tim Lu.
Yeah.
And he was on CNBC a few weeks ago, and he says, you know, this bringing your currency down. He goes, even hundreds of years ago, everybody knows that this is a zero-sum game. And at the end of the day, even back then, they'd put people out of ship, but they'd go say, look, this isn't helping anybody. We got to talk about it. The idea that we're going to keep fighting our allies with the currencies down, because this is insanity.
Yeah.
He goes, the idea is to talk. Your allies don't do it to you. You don't do it to them, because everybody knows once it starts, you just start circling the drain. And the answer is not to do it more than the other guy and bitch at him. The answer is to sit down and say, look, this isn't working.
Right. And, you know, it's funny because you talk about it on the surface. Everybody says, oh, quick devaluation makes all your goods cheaper to everybody else. Yeah, but the caveat is that everybody who's already invested now is taking basically a 10, 15, 20% markdown on their assets. So there's a lot of collateral damage to doing that. And it also, I think it sets a very unsustainable table in terms of, like you said, the race then becomes who can do it to the greatest extreme, and the trajectory does not create a positive growth environment. So,
Mr. Brendan, I got a legal question for you, and it's, I would think all of us would agree economically that if we were writing the Constitution, that'd be cool. I don't know what they could turn out to look like, but I don't think even Caesar would write in there, if I want money, I just go in a back room and print it and spend it.
Why not?
Well,
that's
I mean,
a great idea. I want to do that.
I know, but even he wouldn't have the stones to say you got to give somebody that power. I don't think. I mean, I don't think Solomon would. You know, all the guys that are probably a little better than some of our guys. But the idea that you have this independent Fed and that you go out and borrow the money from the population and the Fed turns around and buys it back from the population, it's like doing the two-step. You're getting to the exact same spot, except you're given the member firms the heads up both sides and you're paying commissions both ways.
Right.
So when does, just from a legal standpoint, somebody stand up in the Senate or the House and say, wait a minute, my name is Brendan Cornyn, I'm an attorney. You guys are doing what you're not supposed to be doing. You're just getting coordination from this allegedly independent place. You're essentially, what you just said, Pete, is that you essentially, without running it by the listeners, maybe in a way they can understand it, you're saying the Japanese the Japanese government is going out and borrowing money from people, and the central bank is turning around and buying, essentially buying the bond back from the people.
All right.
So they're owning the whole shipload, even though they can't buy it direct because that's, quote, against the law.
Mm-hmm. What you're talking about is a classic argument about what's legal and what's moral. I mean, it really comes down to that. What's legal and what's moral? And how many times have you heard the argument when somebody has been confronted with doing something wrong, and what's the first thing they say? Well, I ran it by my lawyers, and they said it's legal. And they said it's legal. It's within the four corners of the law. But what goes unsaid is who wrote the law, and how is it structured? And, you know, even if you structure a law so it benefits a particular type of particular class, whether it's business or individuals, they're going to benefit. And they can always rely back and say, it's legal. I can look at this and say, I can make an argument that I can do this under the law. It may not be right, it may not be moral, and that's a completely different issue that is untouched by the legal argument. So when you say, how can they get away with it? They get away with it because of the way that they draw up the laws.
But, I mean, I understand how they get away with it, but how does somebody... I mean, Pete, I think you were the guy who was last time you mentioned a couple of the different, in Japan or in here, and you mentioned a couple of specific issues where some of our stuff, like a certain 5-year or something, our guys own like 75% of it. And you're talking about Japan, they own 75-80% of certain. I mean, it gets to the point where even the dummies got to say, what are we doing?
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, you're right. And you know what? They're compelled, basis the programs they build, and I think, Brendan, you hit on it too. Does it meet the four corners of the law? The whole asset purchase scheme in the United States was the Fed took it as there's terminology called exigent circumstances. Mm-hmm. They use that to mean anything they want. So they can determine that something falls into that bucket and act in any fashion. That's probably, I mean, the law was written in a broad fashion to give them latitude. But
and oftentimes it's done for a very good reason, that you don't want to, I mean, the Chief's argument about bureaucrats, you don't want to put the decisions in the hands of bureaucrats all the time to the rank of minutia. So you give some latitude, some leeway. Right. It's somebody higher up the chain. But if that person higher up the chain is morally ambiguous, or exigent circumstances really should be called into play, that there should be a wide latitude, that's what it was meant to do. But when you corrupt that decision making by whoever it is that's in power, that's where you get the egregious swings.
Well, and you know, for me, it's just, I don't see, in the short term, sure, they're trying to, whether or not they're trying to stimulate inflation or increase purchasing power, and seeing that multiplier effect take place within the economy, the amount of debt, if rates actually do what they'd like, which is normalize with the rate of inflation or possibly get above it, which we traditionally see, debt service for every one of these countries becomes mm-hmm. unsustainable.
Yeah.
I think we're spending 30-some cents per dollar of tax revenue we take in to service debt, mm-hmm. with the bulk of it sitting under 2%. Imagine what we would, I mean, at 4.5%, and that's not an unusual 10-year rate,
mm-hmm.
what that's going to consume in terms of resources in this country. And basically, every dollar that is generated or put into the economy has a multiplier effect.
Mm-hmm.
These dollars have no multiplier effect. They're really, as you said, Brendan, they're basically created by one part of the government, consumed by another, and mm-hmm. there is nothing that drives any necessarily multiplier growth effect, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I would argue that, and I don't know how you go about this one, but they, by doing what they're doing and driving these rates down, especially since over a 30-40 year period, you've decided that you want people to be in their own pension plans and things like that.
Right.
I went through the calculation. We had my worst guest ever was a, I mean, believe it or not.
Hey, don't talk about me. I've only been twice now.
You're perfect. I love you guys. David Stockman was the worst. He came on. The guy must have a lungs the size of this room. He came on and he did his stump speech for his book for 10 minutes. He never stopped talking. I couldn't even imagine that, me not getting a word in edgewise. And I mean, he literally, but he was calculating $400 billion a year that the government is essentially stealing from savers with the interest rates. Like you're talking about, they don't have to pay the interest. And by the way, nobody's getting it either.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, talk about the multiplier effect, which you articulately just brought up. I see the multiplier effect in reverse because my significant other and her friends are in real estate business. The amount of older people that you see in their home that have, you know, $1 million in the bank, that are making God knows small amount that don't have the roof, don't get the windows fixed, don't get the car every 5 years. It is having, I can see 1 or 2 years take one for the team, but we're talking like 8 years
right.
of, and it's, and Stockman's number was $400 billion. So I emailed him afterward and I said, I think the number is more like 325. And he writes me back, he goes, you're right, but 400 sounds better. but so let's say 350. That over an 8 year period, that's a boatload of money to yank out of your population.
Right.
I mean, so I don't know that's you talk about a multiplier effect. I'm going to say that the multiplier effect with these old people putting on additions and putting on a roof and an air conditioner once in a while is better than the government using it.
Oh, mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. That's it. Yeah. That's where you actually, you know, you were wondering why even when 4 or 5 years ago we were seeing growth 2.5-3%. Why wasn't it the traditional 4.5-5% that we right. see in the middle part or even the end part of an expansion? I think that constraint plays into it, and it creates a vicious cycle where we you know, every time we come back and they basically take more, they take more the true dollars that expand the economy out of the system to support a manipulated interest rate environment, they create a non-sustainable growth expectation.
But why isn't debt more of a consideration right now?
It's a good question. I think that, I mean, from my standpoint, it seemed like there's an ever-diminishing amount. I mean, the greatest way to solve that would be to deal with the budget mm-hmm. deficit and get us into, again, putting more money into the hands of
consumers.
Right. And mm-hmm. I don't think what we've engineered in the past couple of years has necessarily done that. So mm-hmm. how do they go back? There's no more money to give at $1 trillion a year of deficit.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going back and generating, as much as everybody talks about it, another series of middle-class tax breaks or business tax breaks in domestic tax breaks that would actually cause that multiple.
Well, those really haven't happened. I mean, no. those never happened, even with the speaking point, the talking points about that, that didn't happen.
Right.
But
no,
without putting money, without putting money in the hands of the consumer, right. how do you grow the economy? Other than borrowing so that on paper you've got money in the bank, but you've got to pay that back, and you're losing money when you pay the interest back.
Right. So, I think part of it is the challenge. There seems to be a challenge and a concern about, you would think, and I've been talking to people, geez, if I could borrow money at 0%, I'd borrow it until my hands bleed. The question is what's that money going to be worth? And that's the caveat, that nobody sees a worthwhile investment right now. Basis. I was talking to a friend of mine who actually rents a large amount of space in a building in the West Loop, and people that own the building just flipped it, and they owned it for about 4 years. And the guys who bought it wanted to talk to him about what he thought of the space and everything. And through that discussion, he found out that the guys who flipped that building made a net 3% over those 5 years, not 15%, but 3%. And if you think about real estate with a bid ask of 5-10% usually,
easy, yeah.
plus whatever you're paying to get it done. Here are guys looking to get return at 3%. So I think you're seeing that expectation of compression along all pieces of business. And I don't – it's a great question, Brendan, because I don't know how you quite break that cycle. But I think part of the challenge for U.S. breaking that cycle is that money is cheap globally. It hasn't been as easy to access as it was. It's easier to access now than it was 10 years ago, and I think that puts a drag on everything we do here. So,
mm-hmm.
Well, the idea that you drive your interest rates down to, pick a number, 2% or lower, at the same period of time your credit card rates go up,
yeah,
is insanity. Somehow or another, I mean, this probably isn't doable, but the Chiefs trickle-up rules instead of trickle-down, I would have a top on interest card or credit card rates of 15%. If you can't make money there, something's wrong.
Right.
I would lower the student loan. And I don't want to pay people off. I would lower it a percent or a percent and a half. Most of these guys are paying 6.
Right.
The government's paying 2.
And those got, yeah. Those,
and that's a big scale.
And those just got jacked up.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. For government guaranteed debt.
And I would take the $3,000. When I started the business, the Dow was 800. And if you had a capital loss, you could take $3,000 a year off on against your income. Here we are 40 years later, and the Dow is pushing 3,000, and the number is still 3,000.
Right.
So if the three of us decided, We're gonna put $400,000 a piece in the hot dog stand, and the place crumbles. We're never gonna be an entrepreneur again because we got to take our $400,000 off at $3,000 a year. Right. That's mm-hmm. insane. So let's figure out a way for people on the low end, and somebody who actually wants to do some business should be able to get a loan. Right now, you can't get a loan from a bank.
Right.
So what are we doing? Let's extend as security investor to the online guys. Let them form a bank. Why should they be willing to lend money to people at 5% when banks don't? And banks, you got to get a personal guarantee for right. a corporate. I mean, we've put everybody says the small group makes jobs. We've made it impossible for a small group to make jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And, yeah. you know, it's interesting because you mentioned that credit card rates getting jacked up. Student loans just went through, I know personally, went through a cycle of getting pushed up. I got three kids who are just graduating from school. But you look at the commercial side of it, the institutional side of it, credit quality spreads have never been cheaper. So I think Argentina just pushed out 100-year paper for 3.5%, I find insane for a company that's defaulted on debt twice. People are willing to loan money for 100 years at 3.5%.
But they'll recover in 100 years.
Well, right.
you'll get a premium.
Yeah. What did John Deere just do, 2.5 or something?
Yeah.
30 years?
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about insanity.
I know. It's interesting. We've sat here long enough where perception seems reality. Whether or not this is sustainable is the great question. So
we're grinding the hell out of our. I was at. Matter of fact, I was being somewhat of an ass, probably, but that's okay. I was with one guy who's totally not a one percenter. He works for OCC. The other guy works for the Fed and is somewhat of a one percenter because he's going to be on the. He's been on the government draw for a long time, and they go, I have no sympathy for people with credit card debt or student loan debt. And I go, should I go get Billy, the guy in series, right. to put the one percenter table only card? Like, mm-hmm. what are you talking about? Most people, they don't look at their credit card interest because they never expect to pay it. Then all of a sudden, one day, the furniture that they bought for $5,000 that there was no, is no problem. They get a medical expense, they get something else, and all of a sudden they're stuck.
Yeah.
And the guy from the Fed tells me, well, the amount of write-offs on the loans are this percentage. That's why they got to charge this month. And I said, wait a minute. If you went back and you looked and see the furniture costs $5,000, and 5 years later the guy finally declares bankruptcy, I'm going to guess half the time they've already paid these people 10.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And there's still 10 left on there.
Yeah.
Between a late fee and something else. I mean, I got a mortgage. My significant other tells me she had somebody that missed two mortgage payments or something. And I go, okay. All of a sudden, the guy got a new plumbing job, whatever he does. I said, just tell him to send the two mortgage payments to the bank. Mm-hmm. Oh, no, you can't do that. What do you mean? Well, I mean, this is how naive I am. She goes, well, there's already late fees, there's attorney's fees. Attorney's fees? What'd they do?
Yeah, now you're on the list.
Yeah, what I said, she goes, well, the attorney fees are probably $2,000. I said, I want a list of the 5 hours or 10 hours this idiot paid on it and why he was doing, why what he did for $200 an hour for 10 hours. Well, they're never going to give it to you. But they're going to charge me? Well, yeah. I mean, somehow or another, this is all wrong. And I see the fights that people like us have with our utility companies, with the city. And I have a whole bunch of friends that are Hispanic or Polish or Ukrainian or whatever. I cannot imagine, just with the language barriers, even though they speak English, how they could wage any war like this with these insurance companies, or with the insurance companies, not even them, utility companies and the city.
At the point now you can't get a human body. Mm. I had an issue with Comcast over the weekend.
And good luck.
Right. And you know what? You hate to beat up on anybody specifically, but I spent an hour, over an hour pushing buttons without ever getting you to a human body. So, yeah, you're absolutely right.
They even found out about it. If you kept hitting the O before, eventually somebody pick up, and now they don't do that.
No, they've gotten that now. Now they hang up on you.
You know what I think is the worst?
20 O pushes.
The worst at the best, or the best at doing the two-step? If you go to their website, the people who do not have a phone number is the phone company. You cannot find a phone. You can go on their website. It'll say contact us. There'll be an email. There will not be a phone number on the phone company.
Yeah,
try and get a copper line. Right. You can't get one. So what? How do you? If we've talked about it, now we're going to put you on the spot. We talk about it last week. I was. Matter of fact, I was being a little gross on the south side. That's where I come from. I said, you look at the economy, and you look at this 50s, 60s, whatever economy. It's growing. People are having babies. You're having population growth internally. The inflation rate's 2%. people are making an average raise of 3%.
Right.
The guys that are teachers and so forth, they're making 2.5%. Everybody's sort of happy, and if some guy's doing better, it's because he's working harder. You don't get this pointing finger at everybody. It was a slim time economically in the history of the world, and it worked out. And now we've got people looking at back in that history. It's like looking at a human body. The guy exercises, he's eating, he's seeing, he's breathing, poops once in a while. You know, I mean, you know, and then all of a sudden the guy's dead. And out of all those things that are happening, if we can just get this corpse pooping, everything else is going to work. Why out of all the things, the income and the growth and everything else, do our idiots pick out if we can just get this inflation going, everything will be fine? It was a satellite issue. The main issue was that there was advancement, there was innovation, and there was growth. It had nothing to do with the inflation just kind of dragged along. It was never a goal of the times. Now all of a sudden it is. Why?
You know, I think a little bit is the argument is that inflation is one of the great is a great impetus to drive wage growth. And we've gone through periods.
Now, do you believe that, or do you just hear that?
I think it's tangential, and there's certain points. It's like anything else. You look at things like the 2-10 yield curve reversion, which is the quote unquote classic indicator of recession. Now we've seen that happen 5 times in the last 35 years. And it's taken anywhere from 12 to 25 months for that rollover in the economy. So I think people can pick different points in time and argue that here we've seen an increased inflation, where inflation expectations have remained relatively subdued, and we've seen an increased amount of growth. I think it is an argument. Is it a valid one? No. I don't think you can hang your hat on that. I think sometimes the arrows cross at the appropriate time, and it makes for a good story. But I don't think there's any piece where you can demonstrate consistently. I mean, we went through 25 years ago, where supposedly inflation was too high, and
not just supposedly it was.
We had a different. We were getting paid 19% on our short paper we had in funding our trading accounts, and we were like, oh my god, if mortgages would only get down to 12%,
right. Mm-hmm.
I would take all I could because they're never going to see that again. You know, it's hard to talk to somebody who hasn't been in through several cycles like that to say that this 0%. This perversely low level is the normal. Well, it's been the normal for the last 5 or 6 years. Will it stay the normal? I can't see it as being sustainable. I think they're building, again, there's greater and greater fear of that increase because of the costs associated. We've reached levels in terms of debt and the amount of borrowing and the compression and quality that I think make it very difficult for anybody to speak about what's normal. What is, you know,
what do you?
If I say to you, what's a normal tenure? What would you say?
A normal tenure?
Yeah, going. You've been in it.
I'm going to say
a long time.
5.5.
Yeah, and I agree with you. 4.5 to 5.5.
It's always been, you know, what I learned. It's the real rate of interest, which should be around 3. If you go back through the centuries, it's around 3, and if you have an inflation rate of 2, the total's 5.
Right, and you know, even if we look at our rates now, you know, $1.50 on a 10-year, if we're still running at a negative real return.
Well, we're
right,
because we are a negative real return because there's no demand for money. But the idea that when we come back, let's talk a little bit about the inflation numbers. We're kidding ourselves.
Oh, it's measuring the wrong basket. I have no idea what inflation really is.
Depends
on where you look.
Depends on who you are and where you live.
Yeah,
but I mean, to me, if you were to ask anybody, and I have a lot of people that. I've talked to, imagine that, me talking to people. And they'll say it's healthcare, it's higher education, and it's property taxes. Property taxes are really primary and secondary education.
Yeah.
So you don't count any one of those three. Really, you don't count property tax at all, even though it's a direct link to education.
Yeah, it's probably your, for many people now, it's your greatest cost of owning a house.
And, mm-hmm. and your healthcare is off the chart, and your cost of, God help you if you're older and have prescription drugs. Right. And if you're going to higher education, it's obscene. So, but let's talk about how the math when we come back from break and how you turn the bus around. S&P futures down 650, or can you? NASDAQ futures down 28. Be right back.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know.
Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right
now. Well, welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm from Miami. Mr. Brendan Cornan. We got Pete Malmat. We're now going to have Mike Gow, right?
Goff.
You pronounce yours a little different than mine, but we'll go with the golf. Almost like the guy in Caddyshack, Goff.
Yeah,
the Goffers.
The Goffers, yeah, that's right.
S&P futures down the who? The Goffers. The S&P futures down 6, the NASDAQ futures down 24. We've got Dow down 34. Individual stocks in the Dow, we've got Goldman Sachs up 88 cents. That might not much of a mover. We've got McDonald's down 126. Speaking of which, I saw the McDonald's by DePaul closed.
Yeah.
That place has been around
Fullerton
for a
while. Fullerton and Halsted. I noticed that. I was driving by the other day and so wait a minute, where'd it go?
It's been around forever, but, over in Europe, we're
they also moved Devil Dogs.
They did that when they remodeled the station.
Yep.
Yeah. That's, DAX down, up 26.2, FTSE down 6, call that flat, CAC around down 6, call that flat. So, very snoozy day over in, Europe. Nikkei down, up 73.3%, Shanghai down 3, call that flat, Hang Seng up 2, call that flat. Oil up 58 cents, 58.43, 2 days in a row on that. Brent up 60 cents, 63.19.
We've got the spread now is $4.80. Wow. That spread was $11 like a year ago. I've never played that spread, but gold under 1500, 1220, silver down 16 cents, copper down 1 cent to 60, and we've got the bonds, we got to do those. Bund, minus 0.56, and that's significant because it was minus 0.79. So we've seen a move up in these 10 years worldwide. We're up to 165, and I think we ducked under 150. I think we did. I think we were 149 one day, although there was a difference which one month you were looking at. Manny, what do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Those earlier crashes on the Kennedy, Eisenhower, and Stevenson are all clear, so that's good news. But we do have slow travel times coming in on the inbound Kennedy, about an hour from O'Hare into downtown. Eden's not looking much better. Same for the Eisenhower. Stevenson looks okay. Dan Ryan, I-57, and the Bishop Ford have been relatively quiet all morning, so that's good news. Suburban tollways are quiet, too. We do have a crash in the western suburbs out near Naperville, 63rd Street at Belmont Road. There's a motorcycle crash with injuries that happened in the last half hour. That can't be good. I would agree with that. And then in the northern suburbs, Lake Cook Road eastbound at Route 53, there is a crash. But everything else is looking okay out there. Weather today, clouds early, and then we'll actually be hot and steamy for this time of year. Mostly clear and 87 degrees for our high. Could touch 90 further inland. Right now it's overcast and 74 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 97 today. Right now it's mostly clear and 85. In sports, the Cubs got a big win last night in San Diego. 10-2 was the final. Nico Hoerner, their top prospect, who they called up because they didn't have anyone else to play shortstop, made his major league debut last night, had three hits, drove in four runs, made every play at shortstop. He looks like he will be the guy here going forward in the middle of infield.
So if he's Roy Hobbs, is he enough?
I don't know if he's enough. Well, I think he's enough to make the playoffs, but they're four games behind St. Louis with just under 20 to play, so it's going to be tough to catch the Cardinals. White Sox were off last night. They host the Royals later on tonight. Diamondbacks lost to the Mets 3-1. Monday Night Football, it was the Saints over the Texans 30-28. Raiders over the Broncos 24-16. Chief.
What, by the way, do you have any of you guys, since we have a full house today, do you guys have a social media consultant?
I'd like to have one.
I don't.
I need to get one. Even though I don't do much social media, I don't do any really, but I still need a consultant.
What's the problem? What do you need consulting with?
Did you see that your buddy Antonio Brown, the first thing he did was go out and find a social media consultant?
It's a good idea.
Because his goal was to get the bleep off Oakland and get to Boston, and the guy told him the first thing you do is publish the fine and how you were disrespected and wronged. So then, and then there was, you publish the phone call to Gruden, you make it so brutal that you win the court of public opinion, and they will release you. And I want to know if New England talked to him beforehand, how is that not tampering? If they did.
They're not supposed to have talked to him. And if they did, I think it's absolutely tampering.
That is tampering.
But it couldn't have been 30 seconds before the agent had to know that New England was interested.
Well, they're trying to figure out how is that contract, you know, typically contract negotiations, even writing up a contract, even if you have a standard, you know, boilerplate type language, takes some time and some back and forth. They had a contract completely done and signed, it seemed like, in like less than an hour.
It was very quick.
It was really quick. It makes
you
wonder.
It
was probably just a handshake deal.
I mean,
talking about NFL players. I think a handshake deal is good enough.
And supposedly Brady and Brown had been texting all week, which there's nothing against that, I guess, by the rules.
They're buddies.
But yeah. I bet Brady said, hey, you know, if you get released, why don't you come over to New England? And Antonio Brown said, done. And they probably sent a text like, you know, what's to the agent? What's the money look like? Well, can you do 1 year 15, 9 guaranteed? Done. And then it was like, all right, we'll have the contract ready as soon as it becomes official. I mean, I bet that's how it happened.
Well, I think the agent also said, here's a contract he's got in Oakland. Will you agree to the conditions that we wanted in that contract?
Yeah, that makes sense.
So we're not going to renegotiate. If these are acceptable to you in New England, will you accept the terms that favor my client just as is, effectively transferring from one team to the other?
Is there going to be a course in law school? Since nobody cares about regular courts anymore. Guys like Brendan are obsolete.
Court of public opinion.
Court of public opinion. It's a whole different skill set.
It is.
It's going to be guys like Mike's age.
that are doing this.
Yeah, I'd like to negotiate a $15 million a year contract.
So would I.
Yeah, well, I'm talking about the guy who told him what to tweet and not what to tweet to get himself released. To get ahead of the public opinion that he was the wrong party.
Well, then there's the whole thing where he secretly recorded the general manager on the phone.
It was a coach, Gruden.
I thought it was Mayock.
But I listened to it. Was it Gruden? The one I listened to was Gruden. There might have been another one.
Well, either way, is that illegal?
In Illinois, it is.
Yeah, to record somebody without their knowledge like that?
In many states, it is. In many states, both parties have to have knowledge that they're being recorded and consent to it. In other states, one party has to acknowledge it, and the other party doesn't have to know.
Actually, though, sort of like a Kleenex has become a generic term.
Mm-hmm.
Because I have to know something about this, because I was on the committee of the CBOE when they were talking about taping lines on the
floor. You ran the Kleenex committee?
No.
Okay.
That would have been a good committee. They made a lot of money. It's become so ingrained in society that if you have that beep, you can assume that the person you're talking to is not dumb enough to realize he's not being recorded.
Mm-hmm.
So if you give the beep every 10 seconds, 15 seconds, that's considered now good enough because people know that that's a recording.
The audience wants to know, what does that have to do with Kleenexes?
It became a generic term that you can essentially almost call any tissue as can be called a Kleenex.
Right. So any beep can be called a recording? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I mean, it's considered you've notified them. This was a long time ago.
Yeah.
I mean, it used to be this call is recorded. You know, you still get that from other states. This was Illinois. I'm not sure if he stayed. Anyway, Mike, when I started, I was in the trading floor. I was a little bit older than you, not much. Mm-hmm. And everybody talked about, I started in 81, actually December of 80. And all everybody talked about was April of 78 when the IBM calls were at a 16th and closed at $16. And literally, people that weren't even in that pit would come over and sell those calls. They'd never finished the money. The line was sell the 280s and buy a Mercedes. And so you went and you sold $20,000 worth of calls. And when they went out worthless, you went and bought your Mercedes. Probably cost $20,000 back then or $25,000. And yet when I got down there, I'm like, this is ancient history.
Yeah.
And I was a young guy and the things that happened a few years before. What do I care about that? That happens to old people, mm-hmm. basically. So what do you think when you hear me talking about inflation in 1972 and how it made it to a head in 1980 and Volcker came in? You got to be sitting there going, well, this will never happen again. What are these guys even talking about?
Yeah, I don't know if this is going to be the new norm, this negative structure, this low inflation. I mean, you're talking about union wage growth is following inflation of 2%, 2.5%. I wish my rent was only increasing that much.
Right.
But it seems like you have kind of this divergence here where, I mean, wages aren't growing as fast as we'd expect here. But even the way they measure inflation, the way that the Fed measures a lot of these indicators, whether it's consumer sentiment, whether it's inflation growth, it's outdated. I did some projects.
By the way, it's not the Fed, and if the Fed guys will tell you,
it's not our job
to second guess the BLS. Exactly what they'll tell you, because they've told me.
They're just following their dual mandate, right? Stable prices and maximum employment of.
Actually, no. What they'll say is we come to a meeting, we can't spend the time in our meeting saying that somebody from another agency, their report's no good, is what they'll tell you.
Is there any innovation going on at the top there? I remember reading a little Google paper a few months ago that they were able to preemptively determine unemployment based on Google searches. So as opposed to going out and surveying some of these markets and calling distinct districts, they were just looking online. What were people typing in?
Well, that's one way to do it. But, I mean, to be accurate, though, is the hard part.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, how do you call people's homes? How do you even do the household survey?
I don't know. I don't even have a landline anymore.
I don't think anybody does. So. Well, there are a few people, but not very many.
Well, what's going to stop you from having one? I was one of the last people that had one. It wasn't a separate AT&T line. Just that piece of my cable bill, the landline, $20 from our friggin' city is the tax on the landline, on that piece of the cable bill.
Wow.
I'm like, $20. I made one phone call in the last 3 months on this thing. What's the point? So I got rid of it.
Now people are canceling cable as well. I don't even think my parents have cable. They probably stream from some site online. So you have this basket of goods that's supposed to determine what prices will be and what prices are increasing at. I'm not really sure what's in the basket.
The only issue with that is, and I argue with all the young people, Manny, is the guy owns the pipe into your house.
Mm-hmm.
So if you say, guess what? I'm not buying cable from you. I'm just going to use Brendan's stream, And they'll say, okay, it's still coming through our pipe. Now,
the same network infrastructure.
Yeah. Okay, now the cable, you're not paying for the cable, now I'm just doubling your internet costs. What's the difference? Right? I mean, it's the same. It's not like you got four different lines in your place.
I guess so, yeah. Maybe a temporary fix.
Well, so well again, things will change. There'll be an adaptation to work around that. And innovation will have something else that won't require that cable to service the product.
But I guess, Mike, you seem like a guy who knows more about numbers than I certainly do now. How do bad statistics, we're just assuming they're bad. Our opinion is some of these numbers are bad. But how do you turn the law of large numbers? I'll give you an example in the market.
Sure.
GE falls from 30 to 5. Okay, well, it's got its ass kicked.
Kicked out of the Dow, yep.
And all of a sudden, it goes from 5 to 550, and some blithering idiot says, geez, up 10% today. It's up a half a buck. Jesus. Mm-hmm. If these numbers have been wrong for a long period of time, and I've got in my voluminous mess here called files, there'll be stuff where people will go back 25 years and they'll say, okay, the cost of a Notre Dame Northwestern education is three times higher than it should be by the CPI. Mm-hmm. Or the cost of whatever it is, medical care is I mean, it's light years off the chart. So it's up like 1,000%. The cost of Cub tickets, you know, are up 800%, and they should be up 200% or something like that. Mm. I mean, and then now you got wages that have done nothing like that.
Yeah.
So now you get a month like last month or 2 months ago when everybody was crowing. They say, okay, your CPI is up 1.8 from a number that's, you know, but then all of a sudden now your medical bills only went up 1%, and somebody's salary went up 2%. But the guy's making $10. Now he's making, you know, $10.20. So what? I mean, you're almost at a point where the numbers are so skewed that you can't even compare one to the other.
Yeah.
Now, how do you fix that?
All whacked.
Yeah. Baseline's all. How do you? If you wanted to, how would you even fix that?
Oh man, I have no idea. That's a pretty difficult question.
When the guys sort of numbers at you, it's like, what are they even talking about? What do they even mean?
Mm-hmm. Well, the way that you fix that is when you ask the question. I will tell you. The question you should be asking is, and then I skew it to my way of giving you the right answer.
Well, but I mean, somewhere along the line, I mean, Carl Denninger, who loves these numbers, he said he dug back, according to the BLS, if you, the cost of a Ford F-150 has not gone up since 2000. Hmm. Because, you know, it's all little changes here and there, and you get backup cameras again as well. He said, but the fact is, the thing used to cost $12, and now it costs $28 for your basic. Mm-hmm. So you still can't get in one for $12 and, like, you know, haul your plumbing equipment around for 5 years. Mm-hmm. So, but that they're telling you it's the same price, but it's not. Mm-hmm. And if you compare that, where you're sort of lying that way, to the guy back then used to make $20,000 and he's still making $20,000. Now this F-150 is over a year's salary, where it used to be six tenths of a year. And I don't know how you ever fix that. You're supposed
point.
To be telling me this. You're the young guy that has all the math at the top of your head.
No, I have no idea the answer to this question. But, I mean, if rates are so low right now, I mean, just borrow and pay for that truck, right?
Well, do you
pay
think,
it off later.
Do you think that your rates have gone down?
My rates have gone down. Honestly, yeah. I mean, yeah. If you
mortgage
look at,
rates have probably.
Yeah, mortgage rates have definitely gone down during my lifetime. Because I was born in 96. I mean, what was the 10-year interest rate in 96?
That's a cheap question.
We could find it real quick, but I'm going to say it was 6.
6%?
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure then. How fast did the rates come down after the 80s inflation, or the late 70s, 80s inflation?
It was reasonably quick. But when you talk about an inverted curve, mm-hmm. your long-term rates were like 12. So people always thought that we weren't going to stay here. Mm-hmm. Short-term rates, the highest I heard of somebody getting was my friend, still my friend, Robin, got 15.8% in a one-year CD at Continental Bank.
A one-year CD.
Yeah, so
wow.
Something like, so maybe somebody got 16 somewhere. So you saw that was really an inverted curve, because everybody really felt that if we don't fix this soon, we're not going to be here 30 years.
There's actually room to fall.
There's no way that the financial system can hold another 10 years like this. It just, you just couldn't. It was so far at the extreme end. And that's why it was so bizarre and that's why I was kind of ranting this week a little bit about when you looked at when's the turn. I mean, back then there were companies that were making, that were giving you a $3 dividend. They were trading, $25 or something, because they still weren't as much as a, because nobody wanted in the market. When you could get 12-15% risk-free, you didn't even want to buy a stock giving you 10% because there's risk in the stock.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yet the turn was that stock could go up, and really I never thought the rates could go much higher than the 16% they were. Because otherwise, I mean, how could we have had a society?
That was kind of the plan, right? To slow down the pace of money, the velocity of money.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it all started with going off the long history. I'll just keep it brief. It started with what? Bretton Woods, right? In 1968, was it, or 69, we went off the Bretton Woods standard. We essentially went off the gold standard to increase the money supply to pay for the Vietnam War. So does that sound familiar with the Iraqi War?
Sure.
I mean, so we increased the money supply to pay for the war, essentially. It just kept going. And then you had a couple of economic shocks with the oil stuff. Mm-hmm. So it all started in the oil. That's why you hear this oil and food out of the thing, because it started in the oil area. You get an oil shock. Mm-hmm. So then oil went up, and everybody said, oh, it's just the oil. Mm-hmm. Then, well, wait a minute. I mean, Brendan's bread is being delivered by a truck, so the truck costs more because they're using gasoline. So then there's so much delivery stuff and food business. But now we got to add that that's a high energy area.
Yeah, do you look at CPI? Do you look at core CPI? Do you look at U3? Do you look at U6?
Well, you're dragging. You got to use diesel to natural gas to dry your corn. So the entire food system is very, very oil intensive.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why you pull that out. Meanwhile, you got this short little guy running around Washington named Milton Friedman saying, you idiots, you're the ones that are causing it.
Yeah, hands off.
The money supply is going in too fast, and it's always a monetary phenomenon. And even this time, that's why I, after being through that, I never wanted to see it again. It's because it comes in one area. Now, it's medical stuff. I mean, it's 20% of the economy, and it's 6% of the CPI.
Wow.
It's the elephant in the room.
Yeah,
and then it was oil. Oh, it's just the oil. If it wasn't for these damn Arabs, we'd be okay, right? I mean, you remember that. I mean, guess what? It wasn't the. It just happens to go there first. If inflation was like a stock dividend, if all of a sudden everybody said, okay, we're gonna have 100% inflation, and every dollar in your pocket, walk over to Fed and they'll give you a $2 bill, and everything doubled, it wouldn't do anything for anybody.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole trick is to be one of the people when it starts to be in an area that you can raise prices when other people can't. I mean, it's an advantage for some and not for others. Mm-hmm. I mean, clearly in our industry, we haven't been able to raise prices on trades ever for as long as I can remember.
The opposite, yeah.
Yeah, yet the rent here goes up. I mean, it's like, so it's not just, so that's why you guys are starting another exchange. I'll lead into that.
That's right.
I mean, you're trying to make things more efficient for people to buy and sell.
That's exactly right. And the belief is that stocks are too expensive. I mean, how much is it going to cost you to buy 100 shares of SPY? No one can afford that
right. Nowadays,
right? If you want to do a covered call on Apple, some passive investment, it's just too costly. And then you dig into, you know, day trading rules for people who want to be
right. Like
me, in and out during the market all day. I mean, trading in college, I used
Wait
to get...
Wait a minute. The regulators are helping you. They're saving you from yourself.
Oh, my gosh. I don't want to. I mean...
You don't want to be saved?
You don't want to be saved?
I don't want to be saved. If I'm going to run into a wall, which I won't do, I mean, let me make my own decisions here. I think it's kind of a tax on the people who have spent the time to learn about trading.
Where did we get this guy? Doesn't even realize these bureaucrats are saving you.
To push you to advisors and people who are much more informed than you.
Yeah. And what happens when you get too big to fail? You want to be too big to fail, so if you make a mistake and you crash into the wall, you'll get a bailout.
Yeah.
Yeah, hedge yourself, right? So what we've tried to do is we've tried to enable the benefits offered by futures products, the capital efficiency, the diversity, the lack of a pattern day trading rule, and the unique diversification offered from some of these products you can't trade in ETFs and stocks, and scale them down, make them normal, simple, and standard for everyday traders.
Mike, why do you think that in Brendan, in my time, if you owned AT&T or Lucent, which was Western Electric, You wanted your stock in that 20 to 40 range where every man could own it. You wanted your stock to be in everybody's
throw it in all the pension deposit. Funds, throw it in everyone's
but account. They were in Mon Pa's safety deposit box. It was mm-hmm. That was your goal. And now, Amazon, Google, they want it to be 60% held by ETFs and funds. Why do you suppose that is?
Just makes it more accessible for everyone. It makes it easier for them.
Why don't they want? They only want you to own Amazon in an ETF. They don't. They're not concerned about you getting 1,000 shares of Amazon. Like, people were concerned about you having 1,000 shares of AT&T. It means you cared
well,
about
that's a control. If you own 1,000 shares, you can go and vote those 1,000 shares instead of having your fund vote.
Is it for the proxy votes, maybe? I mean, is it going to go
I'm asking. I don't know the answer. It must be. It must be, actually. But they don't want because your mutual funds and ETFs never vote.
Mm-hmm.
Or very seldom vote.
Mm. Right, but if I own 1,000 shares and I don't like what's going on, I mean, look at Boone Pickens.
Yeah.
And Carl Icahn, guys like that who would go in and buy a minority share and go in and argue for their position at the shareholder meetings.
Plus, you might actually show up in like a checkered sport coat at the shareholder meeting and say something.
Hey, don't knock my checkered sport coats.
All the mafia guys used to wear those at Mart Anthony. Oh, go ahead. But I'm not accusing you of being a mafia guy.
If everyone wanted to go to the Warren Buffett shareholder meeting, you know, for every stock they had, then maybe people would take the liberty to purchase individual shares. But it doesn't refute the fact that, I mean, stocks have just become so expensive. Apple's being printed on the board right now at $213.80. No one my age can realistically trade Apple. And if I wanted to margin up and pay, you know, receive 50% funding from the brokerage and then pay some interest rate that's associated with that for borrowing the funds, it's just gotten too costly. So what we've tried to do at Small Exchange is scale down traditional futures products, simplify them, and allow people like myself and other participants engaged in stock markets and in trading ETFs to, in a more capital-efficient manner, trade some of these things.
You still need a broker or do you go right to the exchange?
You go through an IB. So the IB is facilitating and clearing the transaction through an FCM and then the clearinghouse, but offered from the exchange level.
Okay, so PTI is a futures firm, so we can trade there.
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Absolutely. It's open for everyone who has the proper approval from their brokerage.
Because this was this has not been a new idea. I mean, the Mid-America Exchange, weren't there, instead of being 5,000 bushels of corn, wasn't it one?
Yeah, they could scale down, but you almost get too small, right? I mean, it's more than just reducing the size of the contract. We've also reduced the fees for traders. I think micros trade 20 cents. So, yeah, 20 cents for each side if you're trading through CME. Ours are lower than that, and then you get into the whole ordeal about market data. Everyone we've talked to has a complaint about market data.
Oh, gotcha.
It's a commonality amongst everyone who's trading, essentially. What we've done is tried to remove all those barriers and make it affordable. Free people to trade, not just from the capital efficiency.
So, I mean, you guys don't have a private plane?
We do not have a pilot plane. Pete does have a pilot's license, so if we'd like to go up and rent one from maybe one of those guys at CME or ICE or Eurex.
I think at least if you guys are in New York in a private plane, you'll have me a ride, you know, or something once in a while. Or at least let me see the thing.
Oh, we would take you up for sure, Chief. Yeah, we'll take you around.
You'd say, there it is. There's the plane. See you. Get back on the bus. You
know? Yeah. No private planes as of yet.
I wouldn't even mind like a really nice prop, you know. I wouldn't care if it was.
I agree. That's on my list. I want my race car driver's license and my private plane.
You need
but
a race
it's not
car
necessary for
license?
Right now. Yeah, if you want to be on the track with the real fast cars.
Well, yeah. I mean, SP futures down 6.25. All right, mark it up or down this week? Now that we got you on the horn.
Up.
You think so? I'm a little bullish too going into October, but I don't know.
We've seen this reversal, gold, silver coming off. I mean, I'm just going to go with the trend here.
We've got some people saying Thursday this week is a bad day to the downside.
That's the CPI, PPI?
Lagarde and the other guy changing. Christine Lagarde. What? For God's sake, can't we ever get anybody new, ever? S&P futures down 6.25. I'll be back tomorrow. Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.